Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As usual, the documents for the Groundfish Committee are behind tab number 3. And if Tom Neese has actually bolted the room, the meeting won't last the 45 minutes. The Groundfish Committee has continued to work on Amendment 16 since the last council meeting. We held one committee meeting, which was Monday of this week, to continue to develop some of the issues with sectors and also some of the effort control measures. Today we're going to cover two items. One is the looking at the ACLs and hopefully an approval of ACL alternatives for the Amendment 16 draft measures. The documents for that are the presentation is document number 22, and the PDT discussion paper is document number 6. There are one motion concerning that, which happens to be on document number 24, but you won't need that. We'll put it up on the board. The other discussion item for this afternoon is the review and approval of a process to consider proposed gears for the Northeast Multispecies Regular Bee Days at Sea program in the U.S.-Canada Haddock SAP. The document for that is document number 5 when we get to that. The one thing that I want to stress when we're discussing ACLs and tomorrow when we're discussing some of the other alternatives and measures to go into Amendment 16 is that we are not at the point where we are choosing preferred alternatives. We are not making final decisions. We are essentially trying to approve alternatives to be included in the Amendment 16 document for further analysis and eventually to be taken out to public hearing. So this is not a final decision-making process. Also, our intention, and I know that discussions go off in different directions, but our discussion is not to revisit those measures that have been voted in to the document by the council at this point. So we will get started. Tom has a presentation on the whole area of ACLs, and then we can open up the discussion, and I hope that the chair was correct that it would only take 45 minutes to get the discussion done. You were out of the room when he said that, Tom.
I'll talk fast. The presentation is in your binder, and as Rip mentioned, we're working from the presentation basically tries to summarize a PDT discussion paper that's item number 6. The Groundfish Committee has heard this same presentation or very similar presentation at least twice, but I'm going to intend to go through the whole thing for the benefit of the council members who have not heard it before. I think one thing to keep in mind as I give this presentation is this is designed and given in, and everything focuses on how we can get ACLs into Amendment 16 for the Groundfish Plan. But I think is one thing to remember as you listen to the presentation is that many of the issues that we're talking about with respect to the Groundfish Plan are similar to issues that we're going to face in other management plans. I think there's considerable overlap, and so it'd be worthwhile to remember that as we discuss these different pieces. I'm going to try and do a couple things. I'm going to very briefly discuss Magnuson-Stephen Act requirements with respect to annual catch limits. And I'm going to talk about that in two ways. In some respects, things that are actually written in the statute, and in other respects, things that we think might be required in the future. The plan here is to come out of this discussion with an alternative for specifying the required catch levels, perhaps for identifying subcomponents and maybe an administrative process to follow in order to implement these pieces. Now, I don't think people should expect at the end of the day we're going to have a fully fleshed out process for annual catch limits, but I think we should have the framework identified and the structure identified so that over the next couple months we can fill in some of the details that we'll have to fill in as we go along. Now, I'd like to point out that Document 6 also has sort of a appendix to it, which is, in case it comes up over the course of the day, starting on page 13, adopt Document 6. The PDT brought forward some of the actual language that's in existence either in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the current National Standard Guidelines, or Amendment 13. Things like how is overfishing defined, what are the requirements or limits on council action. So if you want to know the exact language for many of those provisions, they are back in the appendix to that document. I'm going to start out with some general changes that came about in the Magnuson-Stevens Act recently and that bear on this annual catch limit discussion. The Magnuson-Stevens Act says that the SSC will provide, expands the role of the Science and Statistical Committee, or SSC, to the council and gives them a little bit more input, I think, on some of the management decisions that are made with respect to the scientific issues that are brought to the council. The SSC is given some, the language is pretty general, but they're given the task of providing advice to the council on management that's pretty broad. One of the pieces that they're supposed to do is they're supposed to provide fishing-level recommendations of the SSC. And at present, that seems to be interpreted that one of the pieces that the SSC will provide the council is a definition for what is the acceptable biological catch in a fishery or a stock. Though I think if you look at the actual language in the statute, that is not actually spelled out. So there's a little bit of question, in my mind anyway, about what is meant by the SSC specifying fishing level recommendations. The Magnuson Act also now requires that the FMP and the council specify an annual catch limit such that overfishing does not occur. That is not the precise language in the Act. It's a little bit lengthier. You can look at it in the appendix. But I think it's worth pointing out that this annual catch limit is designed to prevent overfishing, according to the language in the statute. And this ACL is restricted. The council cannot set an ACL that exceeds the fishing level recommendations of the SSC. And once again, that seems to be interpreted so far as saying that the ACL cannot exceed the acceptable biological catch that is recommended by the SSC. I think it's worthwhile to spend a little bit of time remembering where we're at with it, at least with respect to groundfish, and what sort of limits do we have on our management action in the groundfish plan at present. Amendment 13 adopted a number of mortality references for each of our stocks, with the exception of one stock where we couldn't estimate them, and that's Atlantic halibut. Generally, every stock has at least three fishing mortality references that are specified in the amendment. We have a maximum fishing mortality threshold, which is generally set at FMSY or some proxy for each stock. We have an F control rule for each stock, which is less than FMSY, and which varies the fishing mortality by stock size, so that it's higher when the stock is close to the target biomass and it's lower when the stock is down at about one-half BMSY. And that's, I point out that we have that F control rule, and that applies to stocks when they're not in a formal rebuilding program. We have something that we, to date, have not spent much time talking about because so many of our stocks are in rebuilding programs, and that is F target. And the thing to remember is that F target is set right now at 75% of F control rule. Now, if you think back, to the original reference point working group report that was done and published under by Applegate and a bunch of other scientists back in, I think, 1997 or 1998, the F target varied stock by stock. It wasn't this flat 75% of the control rule. But when the second reference point working group, the one done by the Science Center, published their estimates of reference points, they did not provide any management advice on what the F target should be for each individual stock. And so during the development of Amendment 13, we adopted this 75% of F control rule as the target. And this was based on some guidance in a NIMS technical document that says in the absence of any other information, use this 75% rule, and you're probably, in most cases, that's a reasonable place to be for your target. I would point out that, you know, it could be that it's for some stocks that 75% is too high. In other instances, that 75% may be too low. Then for stocks that are overfished and that are in a formal rebuilding program, we have a fourth mortality reference that's adopted by Amendment 13, and that's the F-rebuild. And this F-rebuild is calculated as such to rebuild the stock in a certain amount of time. For most of the stocks in rebuilding programs, that's calculated based on the median probability of achieving rebuilding in the time frame that's adopted, which varies from stock to stock. We also have stocks where the F rebuild changes because we're at an adaptive approach, or what we call the phased approach. With respect to Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder, whose rebuilding program was adopted in Framework 42, we use a higher probability of success. We adopted, I believe, the 75% probability of success for that stock. Now, graphically, you can think of these references somewhat along the lines of this graph, though this is not any specific stock. It's just intended to illustrate the concepts. And this particular graph is actually more appropriate for stocks where we have an age-based assessment rather than when we have an index assessment, but the concepts are still the same. With biomass along the x-axis and fishing mortality along the y-axis, we have a maximum fishing mortality threshold at FMSY, which I would point out is invariant. That's the maximum threshold regardless of stock size. When the stock is not overfished and it's between 1/2 BMSY and BMSY, we have an F control rule, which, as I mentioned, declines as the stock gets smaller, and then we have an F target, which, as I mentioned earlier, is at about 75%. Well, not at about. It is at 75% of the F control rule. Now, at least in theory, we can take any of these fishing mortality references and we can apply them to the current stock size and we can produce a catch that spits out as a result. So you could have a catch associated with F target, which would be lower than the catch associated with F control rule, which in most instances would be lower than the catch associated with FMSY. Now, one thing that I think is important to remember, and this relates to some of the catch levels that we publish now. Generally speaking, when we publish a target TAC, we are calculating it at one of two reference points. We're either calculating it at FMSY, or we're calculating it, in the case of a stock in a rebuilding program, at F-rebuild. So our target TACs are really designed to give you an indication now of whether overfishing is going on or whether you're possibly exceeding the fishing mortality rate associated with your rebuilding program. We have not been calculating our target tax for the few stocks that are not overfished at either F control rule or F target. There's another definition that's in Amendment 13 that I think is commonly forgotten, and I'd just like to reiterate it a little bit. And that is, we defined in Amendment 9, and we carried this over in Amendment 13, that optimum yield is defined as fishing at F target for a stock that's not in a rebuilding program. So, you know, quite often people make the argument, look, we're not catching our target tack for which flounder, for example, we're not achieving OY. Well, we might not be achieving OY for that stock, but if so, it's because we're not achieving the catch that comes out of F target. It's not because we're not achieving that target tack. In the case of a stock and rebuilding program, the Magnuson Act says that OY is the catch that results in rebuilding. It's an open question whether that means the catch at F rebuild or it means a catch that's lower than that, because both of those achieve rebuilding in the time frame. But I think this is an important point to remember, at least in concept, is that OY is fishing at F target. So that's what's in existence now. I'm now going to move on, and I'm going to talk about some things that we think might be coming down the road. And I want to emphasize that when the PDT wrote their memo, as you all know, the policy guidance is not yet available for annual catch limits. And so some of this stuff is speculation on what actually might turn out. We've got some information from the NIMS Federal Register notice announcing scoping for the annual catch limits. We've got some information from meetings and presentations that have held by NIMS, workshops to talk about it. We have some information from papers written by outside people. But I want to emphasize that we're kind of trying to read the tea leaves here. We don't really know for sure what the guidance is going to look like, what's really going to be required under the National Standard Guidelines. And the first step is that since we don't have enough acronyms in this fishery, I'm going to talk about some that appear to be likely that we might have. Some of the guidance, well, I shouldn't say guidance, some of the discussion that has been ongoing about ACLs and implementing ACLs implies that there are a number of different catch levels that may have to be specified. As I mentioned, the purpose of ACLs is to prevent overfishing. There are some discussion papers that talk about having an OFL or an overfishing level, the catch which, if you exceed it, you're expected to be overfishing. I talked already a little bit about acceptable biological catch, which cannot exceed the fishing level recommendations of the SSC. It appears that at some point that ABC is going to have to be defined. There's an annual catch level, or ACL, an annual catch limit, such that overfishing does not occur. There have been at least some workshops that have referred to something called an ACT, an annual catch target. The annual catch target appears to be set lower than or equal to the ACL, and it's set such that the ACL is not approached or exceeded. So you've got under this structure, you have an OFL, which is where overfishing occurs, an ABC that's somewhat below that so that it, you know, is not likely that overfishing is occurring, an ACL so you don't exceed the ABC, an ACT so you don't exceed the ACL, and I guess it's an open question whether we're going to have more acronyms so we don't exceed the ACT. The other piece that we talk about having and commonly gets referred to another acronym is AM, or accountability measures. I want to make it clear that, you know, not all of these are in the Act. Now, I'm not going to talk in any detail today about accountability measures. But with respect to terms in the Act, acceptable biological catch and ACL do show up in the Act. These others, AM we're not talking about, and the other two don't really show up in the Act. Now, the next few slides are taken from a presentation given at a NIMS workshop that was held early last fall. And it's, you know, there's no idea whether this is really going to be NIMS guidance, I think, but this shows you some the way some people think about the development of ACLs. There's talk that, you know, one of the things we can have is a maximum fishing mortality threshold, parentheses, harvest. In other words, the harvest that results from your maximum fishing mortality threshold. And, you know, that's a good candidate to use for the theoretical limit of what you want to catch in the fishery. This would basically be, I think, the catch related to FMSY, and exceeding that catch would be expected to result in overfishing. And as this graph shows, you know, that because stock size is declining, your harvest at any particular stock size, even though fishing mortality stays the same, declines with stock size as well. And this presentation referred to that harvest level as the catch level that, if maintained, will keep the stock at or moving towards BMSY. So then, because there is some uncertainty about where that is, where current stock size is, and what current fishing mortality rates are, if you take into account these biological uncertainties, the Science and Statistical Committee, the SSC, will come in and represent and recommend sort of an operational harvest, the one that you want to use in management, and refer to it as the ABC. Now, what this particular chart is trying to show with this box is that you've got some uncertainty about stock size. It's somewhere between these two vertical lines. And you may have some uncertainty about fishing mortality rate, which is illustrated by these dotted lines, and so your harvest biomass is somewhere in this box. And exactly where it in this box is something that's evaluated by the SSC based on acceptable risk. Now, the concept is, let's suppose this red line is the ABC that's recommended by the SSC. You'll notice that it's, in this example anyway, lower than this maximum fishing mortality threshold harvest. And the ACL is either at or below the ABC. In this particular example, as the drawing shown, it's shown here as being somewhat below the ABC. And then this is one of the presentations, for example, that referred to having an annual catch target. And it shows that the annual catch target is perhaps something different than the ABC or the ACL. Now, a lot of these discussions that have been held so far, when it talks about deciding where to set these particular catch levels, they tend to partition the uncertainty into scientific uncertainty or management uncertainty. They talk about management risk or scientific risk in some instances. I think sometimes these terms tend to get thrown around a little bit carelessly. The suggestion is that when the SSC sets ABC, what they take into account is the scientific uncertainty in the assessments, and that when the council starts setting ACL and ACT, that's where they incorporate things like management uncertainty and the risk that may result if you exceed. So to try and give us some examples of what might lead to management uncertainty, and these come up in some of the meetings, you know, if you have a stock where you've got very poor reporting and open access fishery, you know, it's possible that your controls over what the catch level is or should be may not be very good. And so you may argue that in the case of that stock, the ACL should be set well below the ABC because you're not sure you can keep people to the ACL. Similarly, if you have a lot of risk involved in the fishery, let's suppose the fishery is at a very low stock size, and so if, you know, you exceed the catch level, you may damage the fishery even more. Well, perhaps in that instance, you want to have the gap between ABC and ACL larger than you would a fishery where the stock is nearly rebuilt, a lot of good year classes coming in. If we exceed the ACL this year by a little bit, you know, we're not risking damage to the fishery as much as we would in the other instance. But one of the things that caught the PDT's attention with lots of these discussions is that you know, it seems that some of these discussions anyway imply that all these types of uncertainties can be very easily categorized and considered. We're not convinced that's really true. We're not convinced that, you know, we can really partition some of these uncertainties as well as some of the discussions seem to imply. Now, to move along, at the same conference that I pulled these slides from, and just to give you an example of how another council may be interpreting this ACL requirement, at the same meeting, a representative from the North Pacific Council gave an example of how they feel that their current management system might fit into this ACL requirement. Now, under their current management system, it's actually a little bit more complicated than this graph, but this expresses the basic ideas. They defined an overfishing level for most of their stocks and a fishing mortality rate at an overfishing level, and that overfishing level actually declines with stock size. They then have another fishing mortality rate, which they refer to as the F for maximum ABC. And I'll explain why they call it the maximum ABC as well in a minute. And that F is less than the overfishing level. So in their mind, that, you know, these two things fit very closely together. Now, that maximum ABC is the limit on what the SSC can set as an ABC. But the SSC can choose to set the ABC lower than that. If they don't have confidence in the assessment, if there are other risk factors in this case, they can set it lower. So that's why they call it F maximum ABC. And then the council actually establishes a TAC, which can't exceed the recommendation of the SSC. That's built into their management plans, and now it's part of the law. And the TAC can be set lower than the ABC for a lot of reasons. Unlike this region where we set OY for each stock, they have an OY that applies to the entire species complex that they fish on. And it's capped at 2 million metric tons, so they may have to lower the tack of some stocks in order to keep it that way. They may want to lower the tack of a species to reduce incidental catches of protected species, for example. Now, you know, what they've done is they say, okay, this is simple for us. We take OFL, ABC, and tacks that we have now, and we just say, you know, the OFL is the overfishing level, the ABC is the ABC, and the tack is the ACL. It's very simple. But I would point out that, you know, even this approach doesn't really fit into some of the discussions that have gone on, because it doesn't really take into account all the elements that some of the discussions seem to imply should be taken into account. Now, before I get into recommendations, I'm going to go back and illustrate a point that I think will probably draw some discussion later today. And this is an example of one of our current rebuilding plans for a couple stocks where we have an adaptive plan where we fish at FMSY and then up to a certain year, and then we lower the F and fish at an F rebuild until we get rebuilt, and then we move up to F target. The colors aren't showing up too well on the screen, but the rebuilding F is up here at FMSY, and it's really based on time and not stock size. But at some point in the future, the rebuilding F declines to something less than FMSY, and then once the stock is rebuilt, we go back up to the target F that's in the rebuilding plan. This is an example of our currently of our Gulf of Maine cod rebuilding plan and our Georges Bank cod rebuilding plan and Georges Yellowtail. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we can take these Fs and we can convert them into catch. And if we were to do that, we would get something that looks something like this. You know, this is just an illustration. I didn't actually run any numbers. Where, while we're fishing at FMSY, we've got this catch that's increasing gradually as the stock size increases. Then we get up to the year where we reduce the F, so our catch has to go down, and it continues to build. And then at some point, the stock is rebuilt, and our F increases again, and goes up to F control roll, so we got this catch up here. Perhaps the straight line should increase slightly as stock size continues to increase. But anyway, you can see that we have this line here. Now, if you read the PDT memo, there's some discussion in the PDT memo that talks about whether or not we should expect a revision in how NIMS interprets overfishing. I'm going to explain our PDT's thought on that, and then I'm going to tell you to kind of point out that George Darcy said, well, I think the PDT's wrong. I don't think that's going to happen. But it will sort of explain to you why some of the PDT is making one of the recommendations that it did. Right now, the Fisheries Service is interpreting overfishing as occurring when you fish above FMSY. And as I pointed out, FMSY is the same regardless of stock size. So in reality, the Fisheries Service interprets overfishing as being up here when you're above FMSY. Now, what that means is that you have a potential in a rebuilding plan that your fishing mortality is higher than your rebuilding F, but you're not overfishing. You're not complying with your rebuilding plan, but technically you're not overfishing. When you start talking about ACLs and setting catch levels, if you recall, what the Magnuson Act says is the ACL is designed to prevent overfishing. Well, you at least have a theoretical possibility where if this line were to extend outward, remember, this is the line that relates to the FMSY catch. You at least have the theoretical possibility where as this line goes onward, you know, you've got an overfishing catch that's higher than the catch you really want in your rebuilding program. You know, any catch in here is more than you want to catch, but is not above the catch that results from FMSY. So when the PDT looked at that, we said, well, you know, if you look at the bigger picture and say that ACLs are trying to make the Magnuson Act work, what you really want to happen is you want to achieve your F rebuilds. To us, it didn't make any sense to have the possibility that your annual catch level is set at a level higher than what you want. Now, we thought at the time, we said, you know, in our opinion, we said, okay, this is going to be obvious even to the Fisheries Service, and they are probably going to revise the way they define overfishing to be something that's related to the F rebuild. That was our interpretation. Now, George Darcy came to our committee meeting when the committee talked about this, and he said he does not expect that interpretation to really change, but there probably will be guidance that addresses this particular point so that, you know, you don't wind up setting your ACL at a level that is higher than what you want to really achieve in rebuilding. So what this means is if you read your PDT recommendation, we had a table like this in the document. And what we're trying to do here, what we're trying to do is we're trying to tie this whole ACL framework to fishing mortality references that already exist in the plan. And there hasn't really been a whole lot of discussion about how to do that in some of the meetings and everything. What we did when we put this table together is we were not, and it's been in some cases, I think, misinterpreted, we were not recommending that people change the overfishing definition. We were trying to construct an alternative that would work if NIMS changes the way they interpret overfishing. We now don't think that that's likely to occur. So in reality, what I hope people would do is focus on the left-hand side of this table, because this is really the situation we think we're in now, recognizing that the guidance hasn't been published yet. And this is really what we recommend. The other half of the table is just an attempt to cover the situation should the definition of overfishing change. So we want these things to match up with some sort of fishing mortality references. And what we've got here is a column where the overfishing level is the catch at FMSY. And if you exceed that catch, you would be expected to be overfishing. I should note that these are all at the current stock size, but hopefully that's obvious from the earlier part of the discussion. Then we've got the ABC, which is set at something equal to or less than the overfishing level. And that ABC is set taking into account biological uncertainty. And that is set at either the F control rule or it's set at F rebuild for the case of a stock that's in a formal rebuilding program. And I think that's worth pausing for a minute to make sure everybody realizes that. That drew a lot of discussion at our committee meeting. The ABC then is set at either F control rule when the stock is not in a rebuilding program, or it's set at F rebuild when the stock is in a formal rebuilding program. And then the annual catch level, which is designed to prevent you from exceeding the ABC and takes into account other elements besides scientific uncertainty, is set at less than, something less than or equal to the ABC. Now, a couple points to make here is that one of the things the committee asked for is they asked for some examples of what this might look like, so they have some way of evaluating the context of what this might do. And so the PDT prepared just a few examples, and I want to make it clear, these aren't recommendations. These are just examples of how things might turn out. And the reality is that these were done somewhat quickly on our part, and people who, when they're actually computed, may want to take a more rigorous approach to, you know, how you determine what these numbers are. So the first example, and I'll run through these real quickly. I'll explain. The others I'll run through more quickly. In the case of Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, Yellowtail, on the left-hand side, the target tack for fishing year 2009 is 608 metric tons. That's calculated at the rebuilding F, and that's the median catch, the catch that has the median probability of resulting from it achieving the target rebuilding F. Now, how would that, might that translate to the ACL framework? Well, the rebuilding F is less than FMSY, at least in 2009 and onward. And so the overfishing level of 1,100 metric tons is higher. The ABC, you recall, I said, is set at F rebuild, and so that one might turn out to be 608 metric tons. I emphasize might, because it's possible that when the SSC reviews this, they'll say, well, the biological uncertainty is greater than what the PDT considered, and so they may pick, or less, so they may pick a different number than 608. And then just as an illustration of where the ACL might be, the PDT took a very simple example and said, okay, rather than at the median probability, let's take it at the 25th percentile, and we set it at 541 metric tons. So you can see that the ACL in this instance is roughly half of what the overfishing level is. Now, the ACL, you know, the council may look at it and say, yellowtail is in better shape than we thought, it's ahead of rebuilding, we'll set the ACL closer to the ABC. They may say, oops, yellowtail is worse than we thought, we're going to set it lower than this 541 metric tons. Whatever the council does, though, they can't set it higher than the ABC that comes out of the SSC, so that's a cap. Moving on, just another example. Here's Gulf of Maine cod. The overfishing level is about 11.7 thousand metric tons. The annual catch level is down to about 9,100 metric tons. George's yellowtail flounder, same thing. I should point out that in this case, you know, the overfishing level of 7,446 metric tons is for the stock as a whole. The ACL for 4,914 metric tons is for the stock as a whole. And so, you know, some of that would be caught by Canadians, so the U.S. portion would be probably less than that. This is an interesting one. Another one that we showed the committee, in which I thought I had here, was Georges Bank cod, where in 2009 the rebuilding F is at FMSY, so it's possible that the ABC might be closer to the overfishing level than it was in the other examples I showed. Now, the next point that I'm going to talk about is that, assuming you get to the spot of setting the ACL, now we got to figure out what to do with it. And there's been a lot of discussion, a lot written by various groups that say, okay, you've got the ACL, you now have to divide it up into subcomponents. Or you may want to, you may want to consider dividing it up into subcomponents. And let me give you an example. The Groundfish Committee is coming forward with a recommendation that there be a research set aside of 1% for all the groundfish stocks. So, you know, you lop off 1% off the top. You may have other fisheries that individually catch a small amount of groundfish, but as a group that catch something that you want to keep track of. You have the groundfish fishery, which of course catches groundfish, and you may have some other fisheries where they catch a significant amount of groundfish, and so maybe you want to track that separately. You may have a stock where it's caught by both the commercial and recreational groundfish fishery. And then within the commercial sector, you may have common pool and sector vessels and have to divide it up into there. So when you start to look at this, you can start drawing some graphs, and I'm going to give you one example, sort of a flow chart of what this might look like. Now, you can draw this flow chart a lot of different ways, and this is just one way to draw it. I'll show you another way in just a second. The point I want to make is that, you know, you can draw it this way, and it shows here's your ACL, and it starts getting partitioned up into these different groups. Now, if you divide it up into subcomponents, and depending how many subcomponents you have, you can see that this can start to get to be pretty complicated. But the point I want to make, regardless how you draw this diagram, whether you draw it like this or you draw it like the next slide in your presentation, all the pieces have to add up to the ACL. And if you do the calculations correctly, it doesn't matter how you draw the diagram. Each piece gets the same part. We've had some discussions, and I've had some discussions with people that say, well, wait a minute, I want my box up above this box. Well, you know, as long as we're doing a calculation based on the total catch, you know, whether your box is up above or not doesn't really change what you get. But this concept of subcomponents for annual catch limits leads to a whole bunch of questions. And I'll just start with some of them and point out that in some instances we may have some answers, or what we think may be some answers. The first one is each one of these subcomponents an ACL. And if it is an ACL, that means it has to be tracked. It also means, in all likelihood, that you have to have an accountability measure for it if you call it an ACL. The answer seems to be that the subcomponents may not need to be called an ACL. This is something that we think the council is going to have some discretion on how they do this. And we can talk a little bit about what some of the pros and cons are of whether you call each of these subcomponents an ACL or not. The next one is, if these annual catch targets are needed, are they needed for each subcomponent? Now, at least some of the presentations that have been given at some of these workshops by various people suggest that if you have an ACL, you have to have an ACT. And so for each of these subcomponents, the implication is you would have an annual catch target. Well, this would obviously complicate your management system quite a lot, because not only would NIMS have to track these, but you would have to justify why your ACTs are set at a certain point. First off, we don't know yet for a fact that ACTs are going to be needed. So if we have an ACL, I think the answer is maybe. If it's not an ACL, then no, you don't need an ACT for it. Do we need accountability measures for each subcomponent? Let's think about that one for a minute. Let me give you a specific example. We have a scallop dredge fishery in New England that catches a considerable amount of yellowtail flounder. Let's suppose the council decides that the scallop fishery is going to have an ACL for yellowtail flounder. Does that mean we now have to have some sort of accountability measure that prevents that ACL from being exceeded, whether it's a proactive measure or a reactive measure? The answer seems to be, so far, if you call that subcomponent an ACL, you have to have an accountability measure for it. Well, if that's the case, how do we implement these things? And we'll stick with my example of scallops and yellowtail flounder. Another possible example is the fluke fishery. The fluke fishery catches yellowtail and winter flounder. The groundfish fishery catches fluke. If we have an ACL of yellowtail flounder for the fluke fishery, for the scallop fishery, how do we implement the accountability measures? So far, the answer seems to be that if a groundfish plan establishes an ACL for another fishery, the groundfish plan needs to specify the accountability measures for that other fishery. This is obviously a concern, I think, because that means that the groundfish plan has to specify the accountability measures that prevent the scallop fishery or that control the scallop fishery to the ACL of yellowtail. Now, that's hard enough, I think, with a council that manages both species, but let's imagine for an instant that the groundfish plan specifies an ACL for fluke. And that means that the groundfish plan now has to include something that specifies the accountability measure for the fluke plan's catch of groundfish. That leads to another question, and that is, if you have the impact, if you have an ACL on a subcomponent and you have accountability measures, where do you analyze the impacts of that? And the answer to that is that so far, it seems that if you have this ACL, you have to analyze the impacts in the action that establishes the ACL and the accountability measure. So what this means with respect to Amendment 16 is if you establish an ACL for the scallop dredge fishery, for example, that the accountability measure has to be specified in the groundfish plan, and the impacts of that on the scallop fishery have to be specified and analyzed in the Amendment 16 document. And the alternatives for the accountability measure have to go out in a public hearing for Amendment 16, for example. This you know, is obviously a lot of work on getting these AMs implemented. Now, you read all that and you say, well, who in their right mind would ever call one of these subcomponents an ACL if they don't have to? I think you need to think about that for a minute, because depending on what these pieces are, and how large these pieces are, Your only alternative is to make sure that the accountability measures in the groundfish side of the house are adequate to account and prevent overfishing for activities that may not be going on in the groundfish fishery. Because you are required, the council is still required, to prevent the ACL, the overall ACL, from being exceeded. So, you know, the reason why you may want to go through this work of having ACLs is because you may decide that it's important that the scallop fishery or the fluke fishery is held accountable for what they catch of groundfish, rather than say, if the scallop fishery exceeds their yellowtail, we'll clamp down even harder on the groundfish fishery. So that's why there may turn out to be reasons to have these ACLs. The last part of my conversation here is that I'm going to talk a little bit before taking questions about a process. And what the PDT recommended is trying to fit this ACL process into our existing what Amendment 13 calls for, which is a biennial adjustment for the groundfish plan. Now, I recognize that we haven't been doing that since Amendment 13 was adopted, but that's because in the first part of the rebuilding period, Amendment 13 adopted this special cycle where we would adjust in 2006 and 2009. But after that, the idea is that we'll evaluate the fishery every 2 years and, if necessary, make adjustments. And so what we're trying to do is fit this ACL process into that already adopted biennial adjustment. So our idea is that a safe document or some sort of document gets prepared by the plan development team, and I'll talk about that briefly, that calculates the recommended ACLs. I will point out that this is something that the plan development team is very concerned about. When we did this work under the old multi-species monitoring committee reports, we had a difficult time getting that work done, and we were really focused on 5 stocks. We're concerned that when we expand this to 19 stocks, it's going to be a problem that is going to be too large for the 2 or 3 biologists on the groundfish plan development team to work through. We're expecting that the way the SSC process is going to work is that a plan development team is going to walk in the room and with a recommendation for these overfishing levels and ABC levels to the SSC, but the SSC ultimately is going to either approve, disapprove, or change these, and that's going to be sent to the council. Now, some of these documents that have been drafted by various people say that the SSC, you know, evaluates ABC consistent with acceptable risk. It's not real clear to me who determines what acceptable risk is. In the PDT's view, that would seem to be a policy question, and the council should be telling the SSC, this is our level of acceptable risk. But there are other people who argue, no, that's strictly a biological question, and it should be up to the SSC to determine what's the acceptable risk. The council then determines what the ACL is, not to exceed the ABC. I suppose if there is an ACT requirement, the council would determine that as well. NIMS would implement these consistent with the Administrative Procedures Act. Our goal here is that these would not require a framework adjustment every time they're done. Our hope is that, assuming we're not making other changes to the plan, that this would get to the stage at some point where it's more akin to an annual specifications process rather than going through a whole framework process. But I think it's important that the council realize something that's explained a little bit in the PDT memo. What I put on the board is a graph that shows you an example based on Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, yellowtail flounder. And what it's doing is it's showing the age of fish. And in Cape Cod yellowtail, we use, you know, 4 age groups plus a 5-plus age group. And the top line basically says, okay, we're doing an assessment in year 0, and the assessment spits out an estimate of the numbers of fish at each of these ages. And in reality, in the case of Cape Cod yellowtail, the age 1 estimate is based almost entirely, if not entirely, on a trawl survey index. So now, as we start moving this assessment forward through a projection, estimating catch into the future, in year 1, your age 1 fish are based on assumed value for recruitment. You haven't observed those at all. That's just an assumed value. Your age 1 fish, your original age 1 fish that are now age 2, are based on one trawl survey index from the year before. And your age 2, 3, and 5 plus fish, you know, everything moves on. Without going through it year by year, you can see that by the time you get down to your year 4 tack, I'm sorry, your tack number 3, which is the fourth year after the assessment, you know, up to age 5, you've never seen those fish. You know, they're based on a recruitment assumption. And in the case of the age 1 fish that are at age 5, they're based on a trawl survey index that you observed a number of years before. Now, this is a particular problem in a stock with a truncated age structure and where you're relying on recruitment. As stocks rebuild, that 5-plus group should get bigger. And if you have older fish out there, they'll balance some of this off. But while you're in the rebuilding program, the bulk of your fish are what one guy refers to as paper fish. They're nothing we've ever seen. The PDT memo overlays this with the biennial adjustment process, and there's a graph in there which I'm not going to show. I'm just going to show you the conclusion. And that is that groundfish ACLs, they're almost never going to be based on data that's more recent than 2 years old under our current assessment and biennial adjustment cycle. And if you look at the chart in the PDT memo, what it tells you is that some of your ACLs, the most recent information going into the determination of that ACL, is going to be 5 years old. Now, this has two implications. One implication is that perhaps as you're setting your ACL out into the future, you should be more and more conservative as the information gets older and older because there's less reliability about it. An alternative interpretation is you need to do something to speed up how frequently you do assessments. You should not be basing your ACLs on 5 years of information. Now, the PDT memo mentions a third option. And that third option is one that I think is worth exploring, but frankly is not going to be done in time for Amendment 16. There's been considerable work done around the world on a process called a management strategy evaluation. And it's, in a nutshell, what it tries to do is to incorporate uncertainty in a more formal mechanism and remove your reliance on periodic assessments by identifying metrics that you can use that are easily obtainable and that have been proven to work. This is something that's probably worth pursuing. We're not going to have time to do it. It's a long, involved process because you got to get everybody to agree on what level of risk you want, what level of uncertainty, what the appropriate metrics are. This is an involved process. I'm sure if we ask the Science Center, they would like nothing better than to add this on top of the GARM they're working on right now. I don't think it's a realistic option for this particular amendment. And just to summarize very quickly, just want to reiterate, we still have a lot of unknowns on how annual catch limits are going to be implemented. We don't know what the guidance is going to be from the National Marine Fisheries Service. These questions about what are we going to deal with subcomponents, how are we going to interact with other councils' fisheries, are we going to call them ACLs, what are the appropriate level of risk, how will these things be dealt with? Many of these things are going to take council decisions that I think we're going to have to work through. We're not going to be able to make them all over time. Hopefully, in this today, we'll come out of here with at least a framework on how we're going to develop these alternatives for ACLs, sort of what idea we're going to take into the subcomponents developments, and what the process is going to be. The committee has brought forward, and the chair will bring it, a recommendation on the concept for ACLs, but I'm not convinced that the committee's work the other day actually goes into the level of the subcomponents and the process as well. At the chair's discretion, we can either open up the discussion or I can answer questions first.
Thanks, Tom. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom's excellent presentation, I'm sure, has answered some questions, probably created a whole lot more. What I would like to do is to make the motion from the Groundfish Committee on our recommendation concerning ACLs. Then we'll go to the PDT document, and people can look at the actual elements of that motion. So on behalf of the committee, I recommend to the council that it adopt the PDT recommendation for ACLs that is described in paragraph numbers 21 through 26 of the January 11, 2008 PDT discussion paper. And, Karen, that's number two on the sheet there. And if people want to turn to document number six. It's the PDT discussion paper on ACLs. Page 8 and 9, you will see listed in there paragraphs 21 through 26 and spells out what they are. And perhaps some, you know, as people get a chance to look at them, there may be other questions first, but we can see how they relate to that. I would also caution people that if you happen to get over to page number 7, don't go there. There's another 21, but that's not the 21. It's a paragraph 21 on page 8, and that's the start of it, and it finishes on page 9 of 26.
Okay, there's a committee motion on the table, but also think it's appropriate if there's questions for Tom on his presentation or the committee motion, those will be in order. Anyone on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Tom, if you would, you mentioned ACT, ACT, which is an acronym I don't care for, but anyways, it's in there, ACT. It says in your discussion paper, the plan development team discussion paper, that this is on page 3 in number 7, halfway down that paragraph. The annual catch target, ACT, is set below the ACL in order to reduce the possibility that the accountability measures will be triggered. I'm having trouble with that, that particular interpretation, because in reading the document over again, I came to conclude that if the council is precautionary enough, we would be setting an ACL below the ABC, which is below the OFL, to account for that fact and to reduce the potential for our triggering accountability measures. So could you provide a little bit more elaboration as to what the plan development team thought about when the ACT might actually be necessary?
Well, no, because we're not really convinced an ACT is necessary. You know, if you notice our table that we recommended, you won't see ACT listed there. We show an OFL, an ABC, and an ACL. And in our discussion afterwards, we say, well, if an ACT is required, we can fit it into this structure if we have to. But we don't really see a whole lot of utility in the ACT, assuming that the ACL is appropriately set. The ACT and the discussions that talk about it seem to imply that the ACT is set so that it's unlikely you'll exceed the ACL. Well, you know, quite honestly, you know, how far do you carry that? Do you set another, come up with another acronym to prevent the ACT from being exceeded? The concept seems to be that the ACT accounts for management uncertainties and that type of thing. But it seems that if you incorporate those types of concerns into the ACL, why create another number that has to be justified and monitored? So my short answer is, well, I can't explain to you why the PDT thinks the ACT is necessary, because we don't really think, we're not convinced it is necessary.
Okay, I like your response. I agree. And my other question is, in contrast to the presentation that you gave at the Groundfish Committee, there was a slight difference, and it's an important difference, and that is when you showed the table in Section 21, defining ACL, that is, if overfishing is defined by, and then the two choices, you erased the right-hand side of that table, which, frankly, is the right thing to do, because when I made this motion at the committee meeting, I made it very clear that I was favoring the left-hand side of the column, in large part because that was a recommendation that came from the plan development team, consistent with the fact that it appeared, and I don't recall the exact words, but it appeared that the National Marine Fisheries Service might not or likely would not go where, I don't recall exactly how you worded it, would not go with the right-hand side of the table. So I guess the point I'm making, Mr. Chairman, is that depending upon how the discussion goes, I might make a motion to modify, to amend this motion slightly to adequately, properly reflect the plan development team recommendation, which I'm believing now, even more so than before, is to go with the left-hand side of that table and not the right-hand side. And if I'm incorrect, then, of course, Tom can correct me.
Okay, it was my understanding, based on Tom's presentation, that right-hand side is in the event that something changes in the guidance. Is that right, Tom?
That's correct. What we were trying to do is create a recommendation that works either under the existing definition of overfishing or what at the time we thought was likely to happen. The PDT felt that it looked to us like the definition of overfishing was going to change. So the left-hand side was designed to match up with our current definition. The right-hand side was designed to match up with what we thought might happen. And, you know, we've since heard that what we thought might happen appears at the moment to be unlikely to happen. I guess it could still occur, but it doesn't appear to be likely.
So I think what Dr. Pierce was saying is left is right is wrong. And
what I'm saying is that if indeed this council goes on record supporting the approach on the right-hand side of the table, we may find ourselves in a very difficult situation, because I look at that particular right-hand side as a way to, well, how should I put this? When the report card comes out a year from now or a year and a half from now regarding whether or not we prevented overfishing, we likely will have failed more than we otherwise would have, because we will have changed the definition of overfishing. We will have added levels of precaution to prevent ourselves from going over the level of catch we want. But in addition to that, we would have redefined overfishing. You follow me? Okay, so that I don't want to happen. I want the council to be more precautionary in how we set the TACs, and that can very easily be done by following the changes to the Magnuson Act and going with the left-hand side of the table. Now, perhaps what I should do is just make a motion to amend. Now, whatever you... Okay. I would move to amend the motion so that it would read... all right. Recommend that the council adopt the PDT recommendations for ACLs that is described in paragraphs numbers 21 through 26. That's there on the board already. And then insert after 26. And in the left column of the table in number 21, where overfishing is defined by catch at FMSY, period. Then it would continue the recommendations are found in the January 11, 2008 PDT discussion paper. So that makes it clear, and it does not send the signal that if indeed the service decides to go with the right-hand side, we would agree with that. Of course, if the service does decide to go with the right-hand side, we may have no choice. But still, I would like to send the right message at this point in time, at this meeting, that we're looking to the left-hand side of the table. Again, that's my motion to amend.
There's a second. Second by Terry Stockwell. I have a question. Would it be easier to just strike the right-hand side of the column? Because I think the motion says 21 through 26 and the left-hand column. And then I guess that might be easier just to strike the right-hand side if that's what the intent of your amendment is.
Well, that's my intent.
Is that what it does?
Well, adopt the PDT recommendations for ACLs that is described in paragraphs 20 and in the and in the left column of the table in number 21 where overfishing is defined. That it reads okay.
Okay.
It does the same thing.
Okay.
That's basically what it does. It strikes the right-hand side of the table.
Okay. Discussion? I don't think it does. I think it's confusing. I think if the council wants to strike the right side, just say strike the right side of the table. But it's your choice. Go ahead. Discussion on the amendment. Dave Gadel.
Yeah, I'd actually like to ask Tom a couple questions that kind of go to the heart of this whole thing. First of all, who sets the AVL? And I'll define that as the annual Valium level that will be required to comply with this. If the public is listening to the tape of what we've just discussed and they understand this, I would be very surprised. We have gotten into a highly abstract area that only a handful of people are going to understand, and I think it would be very useful to provide some examples. And the examples are going to be basically, what is the F rebuild going to be if we've only got 5 years left to rebuild something in a 10-year rebuilding plan? So that people get some idea of where we're actually going here. I think we need some real examples. And at the same time, I also think that we need to find out how these annual catch limits are going to be defended. I mean, what is going to be done to justify these limits on the part of the SSC? Are they just going to come in and say, here's the number? We have spoken. This is our pronouncement. Or are they going to provide some detailed, like, risk analysis or something that says, okay, we considered a number of annual catch limits, but we find these ones deficient for these reasons. Has anybody thought about any of that at all, Tom?
David, I'm sorry. Can you ask me that again?
Who's going to defend the ACLs? Is it going to be the SSC, or is it going to be you, the staff?
It'll be me.
It'll be you. Aren't you lucky?
Yeah. I mean, this is well, Paul wants to answer this. It won't be me. I mean, the issue.
Like Tom said originally, our plan is to have the PDT present their recommendation on what ABC and AL, whatever these acronyms are. The PDT will lay it out and defend it and say, this is what we recommend. And then we will give terms of reference to the SSC that will say something like, review the recommendations of the PDT for setting this, this, and this. And the term of reference might be, agree with it, disagree. If you disagree with it, give us the reasons why you disagree and another recommendation or something like that. So this will be very transparent. All laid out. They will meet the day before we do to do all this work and then report to the council. So it's going to be very detailed when we do it.
Okay, that helps some. I'm still concerned with what happens when the PDT and the SSC and then the council, all three of us, disagree on what these ACLs should be and how we're going to resolve those differences. I mean, is the SSC ultimately the only one that has the final say and the rest of us are just subordinate at that point?
Well, I mean, all of this is open to interpretation and probably should say open to litigation. But what the law says is that the council sets the ACL, and it cannot exceed the fishing level recommendations of the SSC. Now, so far, everyone seems to be interpreting that as meaning the SSC sets an ABC and the ACL can't exceed that. To make it clear, the SSC doesn't set the ACL. They give the council a recommendation on ABC. The council's ACL can't exceed that ABC. It's still, the law says, it's the council's authority and responsibility to set the ACL, not the SSC.
Okay. I think I'm satisfied for now. I still want to see how this is actually going to work when we try to do it.
Anyone else on the council? Audience? We got Drew, then Vito.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We support this motion, especially as it is amended, because we agree that the right-hand side of the column should be taken off the table. For those of you who have read our letter on this, we explained some of the reasons in detail there. First, I want to commend Tom and the PDT for laying out a very logical and straightforward to those of us who have been following this system here. I mean, I think they've done one heck of a job with the very complicated three lines of text in the Act. This is what they've laid out here is about as good as you can do. We absolutely agree that ACT is not necessary. It's not required by law. The only reference to an ACT that's ever happened is in discussions. And frankly, we don't even have a proposed rule yet. It hasn't even been submitted to OMB for review. So it's unfortunate that you have to operate in this environment without guidance. And that's a problem, but that's not your fault. So what you have to do is do the best you can with the language that's in front of you, the actual statutory language. And nowhere is an ACT called for, and there is, as Tom was saying, there really is no value to it. The Act says you have to set an annual catch limit that's not to exceed the SSC's recommendation of ABC, and Tom got it absolutely right as far as the law. You guys set the ACL. At the end of the day, it's your decision, and the law states that explicitly. There is no authority given to the SSC to set the ACL. They set an ABC. That's your cap. You can go up to it, but you can't exceed it. And then it's up for you to decide. And so, I mean, this scenario that's laid out is consistent with the law. We, as I said, strongly recommend that you adopt this. Thank you.
Vito.
Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. As a layperson in the audience trying to understand this, like David said, what's scaring me is I think I do a little bit. And one of the real concerns that we have at this point is, look around the table, there's a lot of familiar faces that were here during the Amendment 13 and the peer review and the working group valuation of biomass targets. And the adaptive strategy is 5 years at FMSY because the peer review basically said that the setting of FMSY seemed to make sense. It was logical. The methods used, there was enough data. However, there was great uncertainty in the setting of BMSY, the biomass targets. And the only thing that they could do to increase the certainty would be to get more data. So we were going to fish at 5 years at FMSY, get more data, and reevaluate the reference points. That's what the benchmark assessment's supposed to be now. The way I understand this, the FMSY is if that's the OFL, that's something that you have more certainty in. EFRI build is linked directly to the biomass target. So if the biomass target is unachievable, potentially, and that admittedly the adaptive strategy says that we'll reevaluate that, we're basically looking at a policy right now that is going to set the ACL down at that EFRI build. I hate to disagree with some of the comments before, but an ACT may have some value in it if the OFL is the legal threshold. I don't, you know, if the law says, and maybe someone could help with that, Gene, if the law says that the ACL cannot exceed the ABC that comes out of the SSC, then that's, if that's definitively the law, then I guess we're, you know, what I'm saying is a moot point. But I thought it was not to exceed the OFL, is not to exceed overfishing. That's different than the ABC. So, I mean, this sounds like a bunch of garbage, but I'm really scared to death. If we don't, if the ACL is set at the OFL, and then an ACT attempts to rebuild at those very low levels, as more data fills in, we just saw the PDT saying it's going to take you 5 years, potentially, to prove out whether your recruitment assumptions, whether all of these things are true. I don't know if we'd want to jeopardize. I see us having a GARM come out. GARM 3 is going to come out, and I'm going to see this council. All of us are going to be shaking in our boots saying, wow, what do we do? How do we mitigate some of these biomass targets that may not be right? And when you've already basically given away the opportunity to have some protection in the law. If you set, if the law is saying that we don't need to set the ACL any lower than the OFL, why are we potentially going to connect it to what the peer review has already said so far, best available, is saying us that the most uncertainty is at F rebuild right now. That's the most uncertainty. And we're talking about setting the ACL at that. We don't even know what the AMs are going to be yet. I would just urge, I'd hate to see the document stripped of any other alternatives. If there's a way to have this council have something in there that gives you the opportunity to set an ACL that gives you some protection after the GARM comes out, would be good. If that's not in the document, then I don't know how we create it in the end. That's my layman's concern of this issue.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anyone in the council? Dave Simpson.
Yeah, I think Vito did a really good job with that. That's exactly right. The thing we really have the least, the weakest handle on is the biomass targets, BMSY. We don't really have that. Those are guesses. At least the FMSY is on a little solid, more solid foundation. And I'm looking for a way to back up to where ACL is more associated with the overfishing level and FMSY. You'll get to whatever nature's going to give you if you stay at FMSY. And I don't know of a fishery around where you won't achieve rebuilding if you fish at FMSY. This chasing after, you know, the biomass that you'll achieve if you fish at FMAX and you get the assumed median recruitment, which you won't get. Half the time you won't get it. It's the nature of the statistic, right? We're buying into a huge problem that we're going to chase after something that's unattainable and uncontrollable because you can't control recruitment. And yet we have to assume that recruitment will behave itself and we'll get this out of nature, and we won't. So we're doomed to failure if we pursue this.
I agree with your comments on recruitment. Georges Van Cod's a prime example. Paul Howard.
I was going to say, you know, we might all agree with you that we'd rather be F-based entirely and have no rebuilding. However, the law says you have to rebuild. Now, we fought in the last reauthorization to have it F-based only because we have no control over rebuilding, but we lost. So the fact is this argument shouldn't go much further because the law says we have to do F-rebuild or rebuild to a sustainable biomass level.
Pat Kirkle.
Thank you. I lost what I was going to say. Never mind. The ACL is set in such a way so that overfishing is prevented. Not so that overfishing is prevented half of the time, but that so overfishing is prevented. And so the ACL needs to be less than the OFL. The ACL triggers accountability measures. And so presumably the council wants to avoid triggering accountability measures. And so the ACT is set in such a way so that the ACL isn't exceeded. So, you know, if you boil it down that way, it's not that complicated. And I just want to say I do not support the motion to amend. I think at this point we just need as much flexibility later on as we can get. And it just doesn't make sense to take that out at this point. Thanks.
Anyone else? Mark Gibson.
Yeah, I guess my first question is, the intent of this motion to strip out the council's abilities to consider these ACTs, is that where this is going?
That's the maker.
No, it doesn't, because the number 26 is still left in the motion, and that's, if necessary, minor changes in terms can accommodate a requirement to specify an act. For example, ACL is equal to act. So it could be the same, or it could be different. That's just an example. So I'm not stripping it out. I suppose it still looms large. But it's in there.
Anyone else? Dave Gaethel.
I still have another question here. The only annual catch limit that's perfectly risk-free is zero. Anything else has some level of risk associated with it until you get to fishing it at the overfishing level, which has 100% failure of 100% certainty of failure. So somewhere in the middle here, no matter what we do, we still have to have some kind of a backup plan or something, the way I understand this, that says in case our risk analysis was wrong, this is what will happen. Is that correct?
Yes.
I need to hear some more discussion. I'm sorry. This is pretty heady stuff here, and I'm not sure everybody's understanding exactly where we're headed.
Tom Neese?
I'm going to try and address a couple points. I'm going to start with Dave Gaethel's, and then I might address Dave Simpson's. Something that's mentioned in the PDT discussion paper that I didn't mention in the presentation, and something related to some other conversations we've had, is that I think you have to remember that you're still required to achieve fishing mortality targets. Okay, and now that may seem obvious, but my point is that achieving an ACL doesn't guarantee that you're going to achieve your fishing mortality target. Exceeding an ACL doesn't mean that you're guaranteed you exceeded your fishing mortality target. I will use what I like to use, an example that perhaps is one of the worst examples around, but take a look at some of the recent Georges Bank yellowtail flounder assessments. I don't remember the exact years, but in one of the Georges Bank yellowtail flounders assessments, we predicted that a catch of 2,100 metric tons would have a median chance of exceeding FMSY. In the year that prediction was made for, we caught something like 2,150 metric tons, and the F we got was three times FMSY. Now, you know, we basically stayed at what we would have set as the annual catch level, or very close to it, and yet the F we got out of it was three times. If you go back to the risk assessment for that assessment, the council would have had to sit down and chosen the catch that had a 1% chance of exceeding FMSY in order to achieve FMSY. Now, you know, we can argue about whether uncertainty was considered correctly in the assessment and everything else, but, you know, my point is that the ACL doesn't guarantee really anything. It may increase the probability of success, but it doesn't guarantee anything. Now, the flip side of that is that we had a discussion at the Groundfish Committee about this, and actually before the Groundfish Committee, and that is that, you know, what happens if, you know, you exceed your ACL, but perhaps you know, either because an assessment was done or whatever reason, that you weren't overfishing? Well, you know, the guidance tends to be tough. You know, you exceeded your ACL, something has to happen. Now, it was pointed out by a member of the public at the committee meeting. They said, well, you know, maybe if you construct your accountability measure appropriately, that's not true. You write your accountability measure to say, if we exceed the ACL, unless we know that overfishing wasn't occurring, you know, this is how the accountability measure has to happen. But
you know, we seem to be, we're the process is creating these layers of how things are evaluated. You know, you're ultimately, you're still bound to prevent overfishing, which is measured as a fishing mortality rate. You still have to rebuild in a certain time period. And, oh, by the way, you know, you've got these annual catch limits that you have to meet at the same time. Now, you know, with respect to this question of where to set the OFL, whether to set it at FMSY, or where to set the ABC, I guess, is whether to set it at the F control rule or the F rebuild. You know, this is the point that I tried to highlight in the PDT's discussion. I think, at least with the information we have in front of us, a strict interpretation of the law says that your ABC, you know, has to be up to or less than your OFL. It doesn't have to be at your F rebuild. But it seemed to us on the PDT that this creates kind of a strange situation where you've got this process set up, including accountability measures and ACLs, that doesn't get you where you want to go or may not get you where you want to, what you want to achieve to. And that's why we recommended having the ABC set at the control rule or the F rebuild. If you want the accountability, you know, our thought, and there's disagreement about this, you've heard, but our thought at the time was, you know, you want these accountability measures to be somewhat meaningful exercise. You know, ideally, if you're going to adopt accountability measures, you want them to help you achieve your rebuilding program. To us, it, you know, since we're tied into these F rebuilds at the present, you know, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense to set your accountability measures so they don't really have any meaning until you're already catching more than you think you really want to catch. And that's why we went that way. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, there are certainly people on the PDT who would agree that our F rebuilds are somewhat uncertain. But, you know, that's kind of the structure we're stuck with at present. So our feeling was that, you know, the accountability measures should have some meaningful impact on your rebuilding program. If you set the annual catch level up above that level, you know, where your rebuilding catch should be, to us that didn't really seem to make a lot of sense with making them an effective part of your management plan.
What else? John Nelson.
Let me try a shot at this, Mr. Chairman, before I go OFF. I couldn't resist that. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. During Tom's presentation, which as usual was awe-inspiring, I couldn't. Yeah, especially after lunch, Tom. I think he said that on the right-hand column, he was looking at it and saying that he had put that in there in anticipation that the feds might be going that way, and then he got feedback that they probably are not going that way. Now I hear Pat suggesting that we ought to be leaving that in as a opportunity. I shouldn't use opportunity as a possibility because it might go that way. Is there a sense that the feds need that we should have left in the right hand column because there's movement to go that way? Now I would also condition what I've said, my question, on the realization that whenever this thing comes out, we'll probably have to go back and revisit the whole thing. But I'm just wondering if, you know, if we should modify or should we go the way Dave is suggesting, or should we just leave it in it for the time being? We're not adopting it or anything like that. We're just having it as a tool or a whatever it is, and it's because, again, I'm asking this because I'm getting mixed signals from our federal partners.
Pat?
Tom needs to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was talking about something else when he said that he had gotten guidance that this probably wouldn't be in there. But the honest answer is we don't know what's going to be in there. I mean, even it's very likely that what is in there today is not necessarily what's going to be in there in the final version. After everybody's had a chance to comment and people have taken a step back and reconsidered it. So I just think it's prudent to provide yourselves with the flexibility.
Anyone else in the council? Jim Odlin?
So the right-hand column and the left-hand column are more or less options. And maybe if we described them as options, that would get us out of this dilemma so that it's pretty clear that they're options. This would be option A. The right-hand column could be option B. And that way we can move this forward. I'm just looking for a way out. Because the way it's in the document, it's ambiguous. Is it one? Is it the other? It's not clear.
So is there confusion amongst the council what this motion does? Is that fair to say? No? You're all clear on what this motion does? Okay. Confusion on what we ought to do. That's the confusion. I generally don't try to give my opinion, but my opinion is to just leave it in there for now. We should be getting the guidance. We've been hearing that for a year, but by May, we have a council meeting in June, and we don't have to pick that side of the deal. We don't know what's going to be in it anyways. Taking it out today doesn't mean we're not going to put it in tomorrow or two other alternatives. But I'd prefer to just move on with this issue. Paul Howard.
Unless I'm mistaken, if the PDT put both options in, if the guidance comes back and says overfishing is based on the right-hand side, then we've got to change our plan to make it satisfy the requirements, I guess. So whether you do it now or later, it really doesn't matter. I think what Dave was saying is he was making a statement that we prefer the left.
Let's go back to Dave.
That's correct, because I don't want to change the definition of overfishing now. For example, right now we may have an F value of 0.25 that defines overfishing. If we go with the right-hand side, then that could change to 0.18. So we've just lowered the bar, or raised the bar, depending upon how you look at it. You see what I mean? That there's no justification for changing what we use as a way to define when we're overfishing and not. It's kind of like what we did not too long ago, although it was for good reason. We increased the biomass targets dramatically for quite a few stocks, consistent with scientific information coming in. But there's no scientific information being given to us now that would say we should change the values we use to define overfishing. 0.25 down to 0.18. What's the basis for that? But if we go with the right-hand side, that would automatically happen, and that disturbs me. Now, if we want to leave it in there, fine. And if the service decides to go with the right-hand column, then there'll be a lot of comment about that when it's offered up as a proposed rule. Council can do what it wants to do, but right now I'm convinced what column is best for the council and for how we need to go about our management business down the road. Again, levels of precaution will be built in. We'll be having the ABC, which takes into account biological uncertainty. The SSC will give us that. And then we'll make the call about ACLs. We'll build in an additional layer of caution that relates to management uncertainty. And then maybe we'll end up with an act that will provide another level of caution so we don't get to accountability measures. So I'm not offering up anything that doesn't err on the side of caution. That first column definitely does. What the first column does not do is change the value that we're using now for the different stocks to define when we're overfishing. I greatly fear that if we go to the right-hand side, we'll eventually see down the road all sorts of commentary about the council's failure to control overfishing. And if that's the case, it'll be because we changed the value as opposed to our doing something wrong, managing in an inappropriate way. I just don't want to put a keg of dynamite into the whole management arena that we work in and then light the fuse. And I think the right-hand side lights the fuse.
Okay. You guys ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Seven opposed. Nine. Motion to amend fails. We're back on the main motion. Anything further? John Nelson?
Yeah, is it, does it need to be, that table need to be further just clarified that those are options for the council to evaluate? I think Jimmy, that's the point Jimmy was getting at, and I it's not we're adopting one or the other, it's we're having them available to evaluate. Is that the, Mr. Chairman, you could ask if that's the sense of the council.
Is that the sense of the council? My read on the table is present interpretation, possible future interpretation. Tom's presentation today said that, you know, while we do have a left and a right, an A and a B, a present and a future, the PDT is still steadfast on the left side. And the reason the right side is there, and he provided an explanation, and all of that really hinges on the guidelines that we end up receiving. But there are alternatives. I'm sensitive to Dr. Pierce's point. He's been at this a long time, and he's seen things that are in documents that suddenly, even though they weren't the preferred choice of the council, somehow end up the implemented choice. So I'm sensitive to that. So we'll proceed as if these are options. Dave Gatel?
Since we've kept the right-hand column in, Tom, could you go to number 24 and run through that a little bit? Because I think that may be illustrative of where we are.
Yeah. I don't know if it does, but if you look at the left-hand column, you'll see that we've got FMSY, F-Control, F-Rebuild. You don't see F-Target in there anywhere. And if you remember the chart I showed you earlier, under our current plan, we've got an FMSY, we've got an F-Control, we have an F-Target. And so what we're trying to highlight here in the PDT memo is that, in essence, what this kind of does is rather than have the ACL directly tied to F-Target, which is an option you could do, but that sort of narrows what sort of things you may want to consider when setting your ACL. What we're pointing out here is that, in essence, what we've done is, in the past, though we didn't use it because many of our stocks are overfished, in the past we would have said, okay, we take the F-Target, we apply it to the stock size, and the catch associated with F-Target is this much, and that's our optimum yield for that stock. We're kind of turning that process around here. We're saying we set the ACL, and that's a catch level. We can do the calculation backwards. That catch level gives us an F that spits out, and effectively that's now our F target. But we're doing it by setting the ACL rather than by setting the F target first. And what the PDT is trying to point out in this paragraph is that this, in many people's minds, this is probably kind of a backwards way to do things, to calculate an F-target. Because generally, if you read some of the literature anyway that talks about setting fishing mortality thresholds and targets and stuff like that, they tend to operate from the assumption that, you know, you set those values first and then calculate the catch that results, rather than the way that we're doing here, which is set the catch first and then the F-target is what spits out of it. So, you know, we're just trying to point out in this particular paragraph that this kind of is almost operating backwards in a way from what has traditionally been done, and that might draw some comment.
But it's at some point it still comes back to an F rate, I mean, we're going to calculate a mortality rate to achieve either the threshold or the annual catch limit, right?
Sorry. We're going to calculate a fishing mortality rate for FMSY, and we're going to calculate one for the control rule or the F3 build that's appropriate. And those spit out a catch eventually, which is either the overfishing level or the ABC. And then we're going to take that catch level, ABC, and we're going to set the annual catch level below that. And we may, or equal to the ABC, one or the other. We're not going to first calculate an F and then multiply it by stock size to get a catch level. We're going to look at the ABC, take into account whatever factors the council thinks is appropriate to take into account, set the ACL. Now we've got a catch. And, you know, if someone wants to know what the fishing mortality rate is that results from that catch, we can tell them. But we're not going to determine that fishing mortality rate first.
Okay.
This is pretty much exactly backwards from the way this has traditionally been thought of. Now, part of the reason for doing that is that the ACL framework and the discussion seem to be trying to take into account more things than we used to take into account when setting F targets. And we're not convinced that all of those can be directly related, you know, converted to an F rate. It might be easier to think about them in terms of catch. Things like errors in reporting, you know, I mean, I'm not sure we can directly translate that into an appropriate F rate. You know, do I lower the F by 10%? I mean, those types of things. So we're not convinced we can do that directly. It may be easier to sort of qualitatively do it in terms of catch. We haven't really gotten a lot of feedback on this comment yet. So, you know, I don't know how, you know, as we point out, we may get some questioning about that. I'm not sure how much questioning we're going to get.
Okay, so we're back on the main motion. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 17, unanimous. Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break.
Motion to recommend that the council direct the Groundfish Committee to continue to develop the PDT's recommendation on ACL subcomponents. And that is not a committee motion.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion? Any need for discussion? Any questions? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 11 opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 11-0. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, in Tom's presentation, there was some discussion. I mean, we have talked or passed a motion that talked about the components of ACLs, but there's also the issue of the process. One of the charts in Tom's presentation talked about taking the ACL and then how you would separate that into commercial and recreational and to the subcomponents. And there needs to be an entire process set up for that. And again, the committee has not done the final work on that. And so I would like to make a motion that the council recommend that the committee adopt the PDT's recommendation on ACL setting process and bring back a recommendation to the council.
Can you clarify your motion on the board?
Okay. Yes, that's fine.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Any discussion? Dave Gates.
The point of order is, this is directing us to adopt the PDT's recommendation. Didn't you say that you wanted the ground fish committee
to develop,
discuss it,
yeah,
and develop,
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
I think we need to change the language then.
Let me just go.
For the committee to develop the PDT's recommendation? Is that? You're asking the council to task the committee with doing that work?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion? Dr. Pierce?
Is that the process that's described on page 10 and 11 of the issue paper? I just need to find the specific process. I think that's it, but okay, thanks.
If you want us to be more specific, we can say it.
Anything further from the council? Anything from the audience? Back to the council, ready for the question. All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Anything else, Rip?
Yes. Next item is to review and approve a process to consider proposed gears for the Northeast Multi-Species Regular Bee Days at Sea program and the U.S.-Canada Haddock SAP. There is a document. It's document number 19, and I believe also that Tom has some information to present on this as well. Oh, excuse me, it's not Tom. It's Chris and.
Yeah, if everyone looks at tab 3, number 19, you recall that the service just published their standards for regulatory standards for allowing additional gear to be used in regular B-Day programs and Eastern U.S. Canada Haddock SAP. Those two standards are, the first one, the gear must show a statistically significant reduction in catch of at least 50% by weight on a trip-by-trip basis of each regulated species stock of concern, unless otherwise allowed in this paragraph, or other non-ground fish stocks that are overfished or subject to overfishing identified by the council. This requirement does not apply to regulated species identified by the council as not being subject to gear performance standards. And the second standard is the catch of each regulated species stock of concern, unless otherwise allowed in this paragraph, or other non-groundfish stock that are overfished or subject to overfishing identified by the council must be less than 5% of the total catch of regulated species by weight on a trip-by-trip basis. This requirement does not apply to regulated species identified by the council as not being subject to gear performance standards. And in the memo there, you also will see that the regulated species of concern, what those seven or eight are, and also non-ground fish stocks that are overfished, winter skate and thorny skate. So we have two gears research that was presented to the council staff, and it was the eliminate a trawl experiment that the research steering committee reviewed, and also the Norbait experiment by the Cape Cod Hook, which the Research Steering Committee also reviewed. We were going to send those to the PDT and then to the Groundfish Committee, but as you all know, they are extremely busy and even asked if they could do it in April, and there was some concern whether the PDT and Groundfish Committee could take this up even in time for the April Council meeting. So what I did is I asked Andy and Chris to take a look at the two experiments, review the RSC comments, look at the standards, and determine whether these two experiments meet the standards. And they found that the first experiment, the eliminate a trawl, clearly met one of the standards, and the Norbait did not meet either standard. Okay, and now it's up to the council to decide one of two things. Do you want to take this report that was reviewed by staff and make your decision today whether you want to recommend either one of these new gears to be approved by the RA? You can do that based on this. Or do you want to remand it back to the PDT and Groundfish Committee like the new policy states? Okay. And if you have any questions about the evaluation of the research, Andy did most of it, and he's here to look at that, whether they met the standards or not.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion. I will move that the haddock eliminated trawl be recommended for to the RA for use and implementation in the haddock fishery.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Discussion? John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Paul, can you just elaborate on the other process, the one we're bypassing, just so that we understand the, clearly that we are bypassing something and what exactly it is?
Right. The other process called for RSC review, which we've had, and they were both in here. It called for the applicants requesting that the council take this up, which we've gotten verbal and commitment from both that they want this implemented. The third thing was to send it to the PDT for evaluation whether it met the standards, and then to have the Groundfish Committee look at it and make a recommendation to the full council whether they should be approved, make a recommendation to the RA to approve these gears. So what we're really going against is having the PDT and the Groundfish Committee look at it, because basically I felt they were too busy to look at this over the next two council meetings, and the staff spent the day looking at it, whether they met the standards or not.
More, John?
No, I do not object to this, because I think if a gear is shown to work, then I certainly I'm all in favor of it. I just from the standpoint of process, does the executive director have the ability to make that determination of bypassing that process? And if the answer is yes, that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to argue that he should or should not.
I'm not bypassing any process at all. You passed that new policy in an earlier, and I had done this before that, knowing that the PDT was too busy for February. We've had these for some time now, and they may not be ready in April. So the first thing I said is, do you want to do this? It's up to you. Do you want to look at this and make your recommendation based on this, or do you want to remand it as according to the policy you passed earlier today, I think it was.
And thank you, Paul. I appreciate that, and I think that it reflects the fact that, you know, this certainly could be grandfathered from the new process. I think it's just healthy to recognize what we've got for a process and make sure we availed ourselves of it. And I certainly agree that that was a good decision to be made, and I'm certainly in favor of the motion.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this motion, but I think we need a correction in the wording. Instead of for use in the haddock fishery, it should be in the eastern U.S. Canada area haddock sap.
In a B-day fishery.
In a B-day. In a B-day. B-day. Excuse me.
I'll take that as a friendly if the maker and seconder agree. They do. Next, I had Jim Odlin.
Just a question of the. I think I have to direct it to the maker of the motion. B-days are allowed to be used in a lot of other areas other than just eastern Georgia's. And it may be the intent of the motion, or it may not be the intent of the motion. Do you want to limit the new eliminator trawl from the B-day program in places other than eastern Georgia's? I suggest that if you have a trawl that's going to blow a bycatch, that you ought to allow it to be used or actually require it to be one of the trawls used in the B-day program. Right now, I believe the B-Day program, wherever it is, requires a haddock separator trawl, which is what this is. So we ought to allow this trawl to be used in the B-Day program in addition to being used in eastern Canada.
Tom Neese.
Yeah, I think that's what the motion says. It says you can use it. Subject to approval by the RA, you could use the eliminator trawl in the eastern U.S. Canada haddock sap. You can argue whether you want to say and or the category B day at sea program. But
Council? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, just a bit more information. In the memo prepared by Chris Kellogg and by Andy, where it references the haddock eliminator trawl and provides commentary, additional comments. One thing I don't see here, first of all, I don't have the technical report. I haven't reviewed that, so I can't comment on the URI report. I do have the one done over in the North Sea, which is kind of an interesting report. Very interesting. What kind of cod catch occurred with this net in closed area one? I would assume that the catch of cod had to be extremely low relative to catch of cod taken with another control net.
Andy?
David, I don't have that right at my fingertips. The catch of cod were reduced well under the 50% reduction required under the standard. Let me see. Table 2 of the Butel report.
83%.
Okay. cod were reduced from 3,769, I think it's pounds, kilograms, in the control net down to 703. And it represented 4% of the catch of the experimental trawl.
I'm sorry. What was the total amount caught by the control net was 703 kilograms? You said
control was 3,769, and the experimental was 703. And the total percent of catch of all species, not just groundfish, for cod was 4%.
What time of the year were those experiments done?
They were done in June, November, December, and April, and they were all around the closed area one.
Okay, thank you.
Council? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The haddock eliminated trawl study that we went over that in great detail on the Research Steering Committee. It was actually the best study that we've seen on the research committee, steering committee, and the final report was really the best piece of that kind of work that we have seen. In fact, we've recommended that be used as the model for how for the format for all such types of reports. It was thoroughly peer reviewed, and the piece of equipment itself has won a major prize. It's a remarkable piece of gear and thoroughly peer reviewed, and that was my reason for doing this, to get around some of the red tape that we just don't have time to do right now.
Anyone else on the council? Paul Howard.
One of the things that we didn't discuss that I think is available to the regional administrator is that I think now we will have, if you approve this or the RA approves this, then there are two eliminator trials, right? Isn't there one that's approved now for use? So it's a separator trial. Okay. So one of the things I think you can do, I don't know if we have the time or anyone's done anything. I think under the same process, you can recommend that now, if in fact this eliminator trowel is more effective than the separator trowel, you might want to recommend you only use one of them. So, but again, that's the benefit of sending things back to the Groundfish Committee for more discussion.
Council? Dave Gaethel?
To Paul's point, I think that might be premature. I think the best thing to do would be to authorize the use of this gear and collect more widespread data on it and verify that the experimental results are, in fact, the results in practice. And if that turns out to be the case, then we might want to consider eliminating the other net.
You're suggesting you might actually have better numbers when you put it in the field than you did in the experiment.
Anytime you use something in the field, you get a more realistic picture of what is happening than you will in an experiment, in my opinion. And I think that before I was to say this one should be the only one and we ought to get rid of the other one, that we ought to just have them both out there for a while and collect some information through the observer program and verify that, you know, kind of back to the old nuclear arms things, trust but verify. I just want to make sure that the experimental results are borne out by widespread use in the field.
So if you had like 4 or 5 years of actual in the field commercial fishing experience with the gear, you'd tend to trust that more than just an experiment.
Yeah, I don't think it even has to be that one. I suspect you'll know in 6 months. I mean, I think there'll be a number of people who will build these and go fishing with them, and you'll get a very clear picture of what's happening.
Did we ever go through this process? I know we have two reports, one on the hook and one on the eliminator. Did we do this for the separator trawl through the RSC?
For the Canadian one? Is that what you're talking about?
The US one.
No. The one that we authorized for use, that's currently authorized, was just based on Canadian studies. It was never vetted in any way here.
Mm-hmm. And I know in the past we've had discussions about the separator trawl, and there's been comments made that it doesn't perform well when it's not rigged properly. And there's some suggestion that certain people don't rig the net properly so they can retain a lot of other things. And we went through a discussion and ultimately made some changes to the regulations so you can't retain more than a small amount of bycatch, right? Some things you have to let go. I'm assuming those same standards would apply to the eliminator if it were approved. Is that everybody's understanding? Okay. Andy?
Chris and I thought about this at some length when we were looking at the experimental data, and there are very exact specifications for the net. And we can see how slight alterations of the net might drastically affect its performance. So we recommend in our comments that consider establishing some kind of certification and infrequent periodic inspection process for vessels that enroll in this particular SAP. Certification could be as simple as a net manufacturer certifying that met the standard.
Anyone on the council? Mike Leary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the motion,
I think if we're going to remand this to the RA, and in light of David Gaethel's comments, perhaps we can do the Norbate study and send that forward also and submit the data from the Closed Area 1 SAP as proof that this actually works in a real-time fishery. I actually worked on some of the Closed Area 2 trips, and we had a very, very low bycatch of cod. A very, very low tack of cod. If we exceeded that, we wouldn't be able to finish the experiment. So we purposely did not set any squid. We did not set a control to try to catch the cod, because if we caught the cod, we'd be all done. So I'm quite confident that if we fish with squid in that area, we would have caught a lot more cod, and the numbers would have looked favorable.
Tom Neese.
Yeah, just for the record, on the haddock separator trawl, it was not based on one experiment. It was based on at least three different experiments done in three different areas, including an experiment done under one of our research programs, and I don't remember which one, with U.S. vessels on Georgia's bank. The data was done with what at the time the data was reviewed, much like the longline bait experiment, which authorized the closed area hook gear haddock sap. It was reviewed with what at the time was consistent with our research steering policy, which allowed for the experiments to be reviewed in some instances by the plan development team. And that was done for those two experiments, and they were adopted through framework management actions. So they were reviewed by the council in the framework management process and were submitted and reviewed by NIMS. So, you know, just to clear up any misconception that somehow the current haddock separator trawl somehow was slipped in without any review and without any experiments on Georgia's Bank, that wasn't the case at all. There was an experiment on Georgia's Bank. It was reviewed.
That wasn't my point. My point was, did it go through the research steering committee? That was the question. Anyone else on the council? Jim Otham.
I can't find it, but we did the study on the separator trawl. It did go through the research steering committee, and it came back with quite rave reviews from the RSC. It's on one of these papers somewhere, but it did go through the process, and I can't find the.
That's true. Howard.
What was there a? Did we have standards then? In other words, I think the big issue that I was trying to get at is now we have standards that have to be met before gear can be approved. So I don't think we had the standards then. So I was going to ask if one gear is better than the other, you know, shouldn't we look and see if it meets the standards?
Jim?
I can tell you that we did make the adjustments that John mentioned about, I would call it incentives to rig gear properly, and that was disincentives to not rig it properly, I guess we established. However, I think you will find that the industry will take care of this. They will figure out which works better, the eliminator trawl or the separator trawl. They'll do it in very short order once we get the eliminator trawl out there, and you will end up seeing that one or the other will be the standard, and the industry will figure it out based on which one's fish is better for haddock.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any pictures or drawings or diagrams of the eliminator trawl with me, which actually came from a squid trawl that we developed back in the 80s. But what I can tell you about this should ease people's minds. If you try to incorrectly adjust this net to do more than catch haddock, in other words, to try to retain bottom fish, ground fish, flat fish, you will not only destroy the net, but you'll reduce your haddock catch to a point that it won't be worth using. That's the beauty part of this net. This thing stands up. The whole back of it stands up, and you're looking at 8-foot meshes all from the sweep up. And that's why it works so well. It does less damage getting across hard bottom. It has no retention of flats because they're going through large meshes. When you and this particular net uses a sail kite, which is three panels that on a bridle that you put 12 floats on the three panels, 12 8-inch floats that takes the place of 80 8-inch floats on the net. One link of 3/8 chain adjustment will make that kite perform well or not perform at all. So it's going to be interesting, and it's somewhat challenging for the description of this net for the regulations. I'm a little concerned with that. My brother and the designer and Butel have talked about this. It's going to have to be made extremely clear that the specifications of this net. But I can tell you for a fact that this is not the kind of gear that you're going to you can modify to do what you're trying to get away from. It will not work. It will do its best in its optimal performance the way it was designed, and that is, in fact, to stand up behind the sweeps. And then you've got that extra panel of large mesh behind it, behind the bellies for fish to fall out of. So I think if you would give this an opportunity to be used on the grounds, there would be no incentive to cheat, because those who are out there trying to catch haddock are going to be overwhelmed with the amount of fish they catch with it. But be careful with the description of it, and make sure you take in the expertise of the industry that's designed it, tested it, and built it to have them involved with this description, because it's critical and it's in the regulations. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience, Maggie.
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I had my hand up to speak to the issue that Jim just raised about the description, and to just say that when Associated Fisheries of Maine vessels were involved in the testing of the haddock separator trawl, and we also participated, I mean, the National Marine Fisheries Service staff and the industry wrote a regulatory description for that gear. And I would assume that same kind of process would go forward if the council agrees to approve this motion. We also, I don't know how realistic this would be because I haven't seen this trawl, but we also set up some opportunities for the Coast Guard to come and look at the net so that they would understand what they were looking at, because it was significantly different than the trawls or nets that are being used. So, you know, there was a lot of back and forth between the industry, the council staff, and the Coast Guard, and I would just say that kind of process was helpful, and hope that everybody would consider that for this gear. I also wanted to ask, the mesh on this net, all of the mesh is larger than the regular mesh. So this could be used anywhere now except in these programs, because basically your trawl net says you only have to be, it only describes it as mesh size. So this is in excess of the mesh size. So it could be used anywhere, hopefully people will start using it. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Tom?
Thanks. Tom Rudolph with the Hook Fishermen's Association. I want to thank Andy and Chris for the review that they did. I looked through it, and what struck me more than anything was a few instances where they indicated that there was data they didn't have in front of them when they tried to evaluate the Norbait to see if it met these new standards. And I do agree the Eliminator report was a well-written piece that included complete information. I wish that we had looked ahead when we prepared our reports on Norbait, but the fact is that the gear standard, our reports, I should say, predated the gear standard as far as the concerns about groundfish stocks of concerns and any stocks that are overfished. It would seem to me that all the materials that Andy and Chris had in front of them were very much geared toward the question of cod versus haddock, which I believe their analysis showed that there was a strong likelihood Norbait did, in fact, reduce the cod by 50% in the side-by-side controlled experiments from closed area 1 they looked at, and probably met the 5% threshold, which I think the closed area 1 SAP bears that out. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of a 2% historical cod bycatch. Fact is, we have plenty of data on all the other stocks that we collected, and I would just like to urge the council to consider going ahead and forwarding on the Norbait to the RA, and we can get the data in front of whoever needs to look at it on all the other groundfish stocks of concerns like flats and whitehake and such things. so we can take a look and see if Norbait does in fact meet the standards on those. You know, the Andy and Chris mentioned the work we did with Norbait in the eastern area under our EFP and under our CRPI grant. You know, we certainly do have catch records on all that that we can provide. So that's all I wanted to say here today is that, you know, the materials that those guys looked at was very much focused on the cod bycatch only. And we'd like to make sure, you know, when the gear standard came up, we thought that this would be a matter of somebody sitting down and taking a critical look at all available data, not just the stuff from our experiment that these guys never got a chance to look at, but also the strong history of an actual commercial fishery in the eastern area for 2 or 3 years running now, from the hook boats from Chatham that have been going out there and fishing in the spring months. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for your time.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. Anything further, Paul? Anything else on the ground fish rip?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we have.
Hold on. Sorry, Rip.
Yeah, with regard to the Norbait, it's still unclear to me where that stands because the comments provided by Chris and by Andy were not that conclusive. It indicated that there was still some data to be provided, analyses that could be done that would perhaps make a convincing case for use of that gear, that bait, in the area as well. Certainly it's not ready yet because that information is not before us. My question is someone going to follow up and provide that needed data and analysis, and if once they have it in hand, come forward with a request for us to consider that that gear, that bait, for an exemption as well, or for use in the area as well? Or is it all done, over and done with? What's the next step in this process? That's my question.
Well, I would assume we've adopted a new, I guess, policy or protocol on how new gears apply for access and B-Day programs in the eastern U.S. Canada area. So I would assume that if indeed this information exists, it should be written up in a report and run through the process that's been adopted by the council. I think, does that seem reasonable? Are there any objections to that? No? So I think that's the answer, Dave. Thank you. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a couple of additional items. At the last council meeting, we brought up the Groundfish Committee brought a motion to the council requesting that the council take action to forward a request for emergency action to the RA. That emergency action was remanded back to the Groundfish Committee for some additional information. If I could ask Tom, we have it's item number 5 behind tab number 3 is the letter of request and some analysis that was done by staff concerning this request. I think that we should take action today on voting up or voting down the original motion from the Groundfish Committee.
That was a tabled motion from the last meeting, so it needs to be, we'd have a motion to bring it back up, I think. Right, Dave?
Yeah, I'll move to bring the motion back to the table.
Is there a second? Dave Pierce.
What?
No. Is there a second? Dana Rice. Dave.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I thought this issue was going to be covered tomorrow. I knew I would be better prepared to talk about this issue tomorrow as opposed to today, largely because I don't have my information in front of me. But would there be any objections to our handling this tomorrow?
We had it scheduled to fit in wherever we could. There were some people here that were here for this issue today. My feeling was that we were somewhat on schedule, and to get it done today, we have a lot of ground to cover tomorrow. If the council sees fit not to do it till tomorrow, that's fine. But I think the hope was to get it done today.
Dave?
Well, I would move to postpone discussion of this. I can't. It's the table motion. Someone seconded. We have to consider it. Okay. I have to wait.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. Just to bring the discussion back up. I thought I had a second from Dana Rice. Dana Rice was a seconder. Twelve opposed. Two, three opposed. It's back on the table. Jim?
I'd like to make a motion that we table this till tomorrow.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Pierce. All those in favor? Nine opposed. So it's tabled, 9-8. Anything else, Rip?
One other item, Mr. Chairman. At the Groundfish Committee meeting, we had a discussion that was brought up by Jim Rule concerning a presentation that was done at the Haddock Symposium. I would like to give Jim the floor and to have him present his thoughts on this, and perhaps there's something that the council might decide on.
Be delicate with our floor, Jim.
Whatever. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity. What it amounts to is I think it would be very helpful for this, for not only the committee but the council, to receive this presentation that was made at the Haddock Symposium back in October. It was done by Canadian DFO, and what it clearly demonstrates is that 80% of their haddock catch comes within 20 miles of closed area 2. 80%. And they have some very significant fishing grounds to the eastern of the closed area in what was traditionally Canadian waters prior to the Hague Line. You've got Brown's Bank, you've got LaHave Bank, you've got Emerald Bank, right on down to the Bank of Row, east of Sable Island, and then the Grand Banks. But the issue is 80% of their landings of haddock are coming out of an area that is 20%, only 20 miles or less from the closed area. And that 80% plus more ends up back in Boston by truck competing with our product. What it amounts to, it's very clear that we're fostering the stock of haddock to very little benefit for our fishermen. And if we are going to, part of management is not only to restrict fishing when it needs to be restricted, but to obtain optimum yield when it's achievable. And with gears like the eliminator trawl, separator trawl, gears like that, that minimize or completely eliminate to extremely low levels bycatch of concern, there needs to be some consideration to access to this closed area with this type of gear. Simple as that. We've got the boats. We've got a resource that's in good shape. We're taking 8%, 8 or 9%. I think Mr. Odlin, when he gets back, could support the numbers better than I can. But he knows what the situation is. The boats that are out there sail up and down that closed area waiting for the fish to move out to where they have access to them. In the meantime, the ones that drift across the line, and the Canadians are right up to it, right up to it, and they're totally allowed to do that. So in my consideration of this, in my opinion of this, is something that if the presentation was made to the council, would be dramatic enough for everybody to fully understand what's going on there and possibly make some have some considerations to modifying access to the area with special gears or whatever. But we've got a resource out there that is doing us absolutely no good because of this closed area. If we can demonstrate that we can get in that closed area, or I don't know what exactly the easiest way, Mr. Chairman, to deal with it is, but I think if the presentation was made, people would start to think of a way to probably to utilize some of that resource rather than just letting it go to the Canadians. So that was the point of the comments made, and the eliminated trawl discussion actually fell right in behind it. But it was very compelling presentation. It's made very clear, and it's just opened a lot of people's eyes in the industry that really knew what was going on but never saw it just like that. So I think it'd be beneficial if it was possible to get a hold of that presentation and have it made and then let the council decide what it wants to do. But it's time that we took advantage and did the right thing management-wise to increase production on a resource that needs to be caught, that is got levels that are way above where it needs to be. The initiative ought to be on the council's part to take advantage of that and to utilize any tools in its toolbox or create new ones to do that. And that was the purpose. And I believe that presentation would give us some guidance to do that, Mr. Chairman.
Who gave you that presentation?
I was not there, but I believe it was made by DFO of Canada, the Canadian Fisheries Department. They had it all compiled and put together. Tom was out there. Maybe he knows. Maybe he could ask. I'm under the impression it was made by DFO, but Tom's going to look it up, and I'm sure some of the cataloged presentations for the symposium would have it.
Okay.
Dr. Pierce, was that the day you were sick? Was that day you were out?
Okay.
It's available. It was the one made, you know, that had a lot of grass and stuff, so whoever did it, we need to look at it again. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Any questions for Jim? Any comments on that issue? Dave Preble?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't thinking of doing this at this time, but I think I'm going to do this just to lay it out and see what the council wants to do with it. I'm going to make a motion, see where it goes. I'm going to move that the council task the Habitat Committee to investigate opening a corridor between closed Area 2 and the Hague Line.
Is there a second? One more time, Dave.
Yeah, it's kind of off the cuff. We can make this a little better, but the motion is to task the Habitat Committee to investigate opening a corridor between closed Area 2 and the Hague Line.
Before I ask for a second, my question is...
I'm sorry?
I said before I ask for a second, I have a point of order.
I just wanted to throw it out.
The relevancy of the Habitat Committee investigating this issue. If it's a habitat closure that
right.
you're looking at, that's one thing.
That's correct.
If it's a groundfish closure, wouldn't it...
It's both, actually.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah. You can't adjust the groundfish.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney. Discussion? Jim Odlin?
Although I support the concept, I don't think it's the right committee to do it. It's not a habitat closure that we're talking about. It's a groundfish closure and should be dealt with in the groundfish committee.
Mike Leary?
I just have a question. Isn't there an HAPC in the northern part of that that goes all the way to the Hague Line? And I don't exactly know what a corridor is. Is it a pathway through? Is it?
I mean, wasn't prepared to answer any of these questions today, but Frank Blount.
I think I'm not sure when it goes back to, but I think it was called the Kendall Highway at one time because it was proposed by Jim Kendall. And I think at that time it was a five-mile strip. I don't know if the Groundfish Committee ever took that up or not, but Tom, I know it was brought up and suggested, so the data might already be there. But I know that's what it was, I don't know if jokingly referred to, but that's what it was called to by the committee at the time.
John Nelson.
Well, there are some habitat issues out there, certainly, Mr. Chairman, with the habitat of particular concern that goes to the Hague Line near the northern section of that closed area, too. However, I think that the comment as far as that it's a not necessarily a habitat issue is very true. I mean, that's not what Closed Area 2 was established for. And I think that the habitat, HAPC, certainly should be looked at if you're going to consider doing this. But you need to look at the impact to mortality associated with the species that we closed it for. Before we entertain any motion to put a corridor in there and just one committee take a look at it. It's habitat's not the not the real reason that's closed.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things come to mind. I agree with the comments that I think that although there may be some habitat issues involved in this, I think that it should also involve the Groundfish Committee. I'm not sure how to do it, and I'll be the first to say that I think the Groundfish Committee's and the PDT's plate is pretty full right now. So I'd love to dump it on the Habitat Committee by itself. But it seems to me that we've jumped right into this right now from a recommendation to see a presentation. So I would make a motion to substitute that we task the chair and the executive director to see if they can get the DFO presentation on Haddock that was given at the symposium and schedule a time for that to be presented to the council as a whole.
There's a second. Is that a second, Dave? Gaethel? Okay, we have a second. Motion to substitute. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Rodney?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the first one, but it's all right. This needs to be flushed out that when you open this corridor, it's with the appropriate gear to catch haddock, which is not a concern of habitat because that gear is off the bottom. So it wouldn't be a concern, and it would be just for haddock, and it wouldn't interact with yellowtails or flounder or cod. It's just an act so the industry could be able to access a rebuilt resource. So that's going to be flushed out a little bit. That's why I seconded it, so I figured we'd get that way.
Thanks, Rodney. We have a motion to substitute to get the presentation that was referenced. Paul Howard.
We'd be a little more clear. If there'll be costs involved to have a Canadian come give the presentation. Have the Canadian DFO give a presentation. You just want the presentation.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Mike Leary.
I don't know if anybody in this room doubts that that closed area is full of haddock. Why do we need a presentation saying that it's full of haddock? It's full of haddock.
Anything further? Dave Gaethel.
This would do two things. One is to give us some breathing room here to, you know, this is an off-the-shelf thing that's just come up. I actually put, if you look at Scallop document number 4, there's a map of closed area 2, and they're showing the groundfish amendment 13 EFH closed area, which is in fact about the line there for a fair distance. So this is probably going to have, if we're going to do this, it's going to have to be a joint action between the groundfish committee and the habitat, I would think, because they're probably both going to have to work on it. But at any rate, we need to have some time to figure all that out. And in the meantime, let's at least see this presentation that's been talked about and see if it confirms moving further forward.
Anything else on the motion to substitute, Sally McGee?
Yeah, I just want to understand. I know we're not talking just about the area that's currently in HAPC, but I have to emphasize that we just reaffirmed a few months ago that that area should, in fact, continue to be in HAPC. And I don't see how, you know, backing off of the Hague line is going to do anything other than escalate the kind of fishing that I think the U.S.-Canada resource sharing understanding is designed to try to mitigate. And, you know, I heard some of this discussion kind of yesterday about these ideas and understand, not in great detail, but that there has been some discussion about how to address habitat concerns on both sides of the line so that there isn't the need to feel like we have to, you know, have all the pressure on one, you know, right up against the line. So, you know, if we have a presentation that comes from DFO, either from an actual Canadian who comes down here and presents it, I think it might be worthwhile to hear about what kind of coordination on the habitat front with Canada is in the works. I don't know what it is, but I've heard that there is potentially some going on there, so we don't just throw out the baby with the bathwater here.
Anything further? All those in favor of the motion to substitute? On the motion to substitute, all those in favor? Opposed? 15. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Tom Neese?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about this for a couple of reasons. I think I was actually the moderator of the session that talked about this, and yet I can't recall it too well. But anyway, you know, I'm looking at the agenda, and I believe the paper that's being referred to is a paper that talked about determinant cod discards in the 2006 Canadian groundfish fishery in eastern Georges. Now, it's entirely possible that they had some pictures that showed where fishing effort took place, but that's the only paper on here that I can find that was given by anybody from DFO that talked about Georges Bank haddock. So I just caution the council that, you know, sometimes memories get a little bit confused, and I'm not convinced that the paper is going to give a lot of information on how Canadian fishing effort was distributed. The other point I'd make is that, you know, well, I'll just leave it at that.
All right, you still need to vote on the motion as substituted. So if you pass it, Paul and I will figure out what this presentation is and try to grab it and present it to you. All those in favor? Opposed? 14. Opposed? 3 opposed. Motion carries. Anything else, Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Groundfish Committee has gone past the demarcation line, and our clock is shut off.
Okay, we'll assemble tomorrow at 8:30 unless there's anything else. Recess till 8:30 tomorrow.